Hi, everybody, and welcome to our Saturday morning podcast. I know a lot of you are out of your routine. I certainly am. I think that adds stress. I'm clearly not a licensed physician, but I feel more stressed day-to-day with my family. And if we can create some normalcy for you and do our show and put a podcast on Saturdays, I know our podcast numbers, I'm sure this is true for everybody, have gone through the roof because so many of you have idle time and time at home. So we do appreciate you stopping by. I thought this morning I'd bring on David Carter. He's a professor of sports business at the USC Marshall School of Business, the executive director at USC Sports Business Institute, a national authority on strategic marketing, 4 books he's authored, Sports Business Industry. He founded the Sports Business Group in the 90s, 10 years of consulting, working with the entertainment industries. And I thought David would be unique today because we have networks and leagues that are in full crisis mode. David, let me start with this personally for you. How has the coronavirus affected you? Is it all online courses? Is some of that, are you prepared for it? I know my daughter's dealing with that. My son is. How have you gone about your daily business at USC?
Yeah, good morning. Great to be with you. You know, it's been really interesting at the university. I think they were fairly well prepared. I think they could signal that this was coming, and I think they built up to it rather nicely heading into spring break. Everything's online, and I think a lot of the students are now wondering what will happen with graduation and beyond. But from a consulting standpoint, and you take a look at across the industry, and I've had the good fortune of having clients that are team owners, our investment banks are involved in all areas of spending in and around sports, and they're really not quite sure the depth and breadth of this at the moment in terms of protecting their cash flow, maybe making other investments in sports. And so you're starting to see things grind to a halt.
NCAA is looking into extending eligibility for seniors whose spring seasons were canceled, realistic or not?
Oh, I think there is a workaround to be had there. I think the key is that everybody must understand the magnitude of the circumstances. They need to treat each other as partners and not as NCAA versus conference versus student athlete versus athletic department. I just don't think that's going to work. And I think as long as there can be a collective calm and realize that they need to work together, and that's also true, by the way, Colin, of the pro sports leagues and its players and unions and their media partners and everybody else. As long as cooler heads can continue to prevail, there will be a solution to be had.
You know, the NCAA tournament, that seemed like an obvious one. I had said this last week early. Listen, you share one ball. Unlike hockey that has a divider between fans and players, the fans are on top of you. There are no masks for players. You're sweating on each other. I thought basketball was the most problematic sport going forward. In baseball, you have a separation of people. Football and hockey, you know, you wear masks. I basketball, the NCAA tournament, for example, what kind of loss do they estimate it is for a Turner? Who has to still pay a bill? How does that – I'm in television, and I'm not exactly sure how that works. TNT, what do they do? Forget about filling their schedule. Does the NCAA still get paid, not get paid? How does that work?
Well, interestingly, sport by sport, you've got to go back and have your attorney scurry back and take a look at that contractual language. Ultimately, you want to avoid litigation if what you're talking about is really a postponement in payments or a workaround in payments or the hundreds of millions of dollars flowing into the NCAA each year, around $800 million from the tournament. How much of that will still flow in? And the real downstream issue is, even if a lot of that were to flow in, and it appears as though some of that might now be deferred, that money, as you know, is to be turned around and sent out to the conferences and the individual schools who really need that money. And so the end user in this case, or whatever, the individual athletic department, they're scrambling to figure this out. And I think March Madness was particularly acute, not just because of what we're talking about, the NCAA, but unlike other sporting events, you had people from markets all over the country preparing to travel to all other parts of the country. And so there wasn't just an athlete infection possibility, but the portability of that problem with a fan base was quite huge. And so that's, I think, why you're starting to see other big special events being postponed in addition to the traditional health causes we're seeing today.
Professor of Sports Business at the USC Marshall School of Business, David Carter. There is a new dynamic, David, in my world, the social media platforms now. I think they often pressure executives at companies into decisions. You know, I think there's a lot of overreacting by companies because of a singular random tweet, often not from a legitimate source. We have seen news cycles around a tweet that can't be verified. So I look at the NFL, and the NFL's like, listen, we're going to do free agency and we're going to do the draft. We're not going to let the coronavirus stop us. It's mostly paperwork. And they got some real pushback on social media. Where do you land on their decision to go forward with free agency and their draft?
Well, I think all of these sports leagues and teams are going forward with business as usual until they're not going forward with business as usual. They are preparing for all these eventualities. And I think the back end of that, they need to do two things. They need to protect against future litigation, and they need to make sure that they're doing right by their business partners. And if you're the NFL, for example, with the draft and even free agency, you need to be in strong communication with your teams, you know, with Las Vegas, with other critical parties involved, to not just signal to them what might be coming next, but work with them to figure out what a viable workaround or long-term solution might be. And so I'm not surprised that all of these leagues and events all over the world said, hey, we're going to be fine. We're going to get this done. And then all of a sudden you hear, well, that's just not the case. And I think the Tokyo Olympics are going to be a great example of that in the weeks to come.
You know, there are two sports in America that I do think have an advantage. They're not beholden, David, to advertisers, because advertisers, once they flee, you know, you lose a lot of money. And a Super Bowl can make a sports network over $500 million in just ads. So the WWE is run by sort of a maverick, Vince McMahon. There's a pay-per-view model in place. The UFC now has gone behind ESPN Plus's paywall. Dana White, similar to Vince McMahon, sort of alpha. And again, not dependent. Either the WWE or the UFC is dependent on advertising dollars, so they don't care about the pushback they get on social media. I looked at UFC and I thought, actually, Dana White's always been hyper-aggressive in terms of how he runs his business. UFC could hold these without fans. I mean, you put the camera on the octagon. Of all the sports I look at that could start first, I don't know why my eye goes to the UFC. Your thought on that?
Well, I think sports that have a very, very avid fan base are going to be protected, especially if those fans are used to spending money on media to watch those events. And secondarily, the two that you're talking about, WWE and UFC, they don't have unions. So they have different capabilities when it comes to hosting events and working with its athletes. And that might be a distinct advantage that they have over, say, collective bargaining that we see in the other leagues.
Yeah, that's really interesting. David Carter, professor of sports business, did not think of that. You're the NBA, and you could absolutely start your season. You could just, you know, you call the owners and say, listen, regular season's over. We are going to start our playoffs, let's just say July 15th, 4 months from now, about the time of the Olympics. We're going to eliminate the bottom four seeds in each conference. We're going to do five-game series. We're going to wrap it up by Labor Day. In terms of business, do you think you could sell that to owners? Do you think, because I do believe last year the Spurs-Nuggets first round series, David, it lasted, it lasted 2 weeks. You could do back-to-back games in the playoffs. You could shorten playoff series from 7 games to 3 games or 5. How long do you think it's possible for Adam Silver, David, to push and push and push? What do you think's going through his mind? Because, boy, you do not want to give up this LeBron year. There is revenue lost here. How far do you think he'll go on the push?
Well, I think the extent to which he's going to push forward is going to be determined by how many players in the league are continuing to test positive. And if we had a couple of Lakers test positive yesterday, you've got to believe that there may be more around the league. And so it's not just a business issue for him. It'll become a public relations issue for him, just like the testing of athletes from multiple teams became a PR issue for he and his crew earlier in the week. I think from a business standpoint, when you think about getting into the summer, that gets complicated because you're starting to see so many other events being pushed to the summer, other competition such as family vacations and other things that might affect TV ratings, for instance. So it's not, it's a little bit like a Rubik's Cube. You know, you try to solve one part of it and you have these cascading problems on the other side. For example, what about some of these newer owners or owners in sports in general that have a lot of debt on their team?
Yeah.
They might not be able to afford to sit it out, whereas others that are very well diversified, they've got multiple assets, real estate, and all the rest, you know, they may say, let's just do what's right. But for some individual owners for whom their team is their sole major asset, they're going to have a different perspective.
David Carter is the executive director, USC Sports Business Institute, a professor of sports business at the USC Marshall School of Business, a national authority on strategic marketing, author of four books about the sports business industry, and you are listening to our Saturday morning podcast. You know, in Los Angeles, SoFi Stadium is going to be the home to the Rams and the Chargers. Vegas has a new stadium with the Raiders. I have relatives there and a son there, so I'm in Las Vegas at least once a month. Let's talk to SoFi because it's not far from where you're based at USC. When we think of these stadiums, there is a great cost. I mean, there's been a cost overrun for that stadium in the multiple billion dollars. In the end, though, as you see stadiums, Foxborough, we notice this, where there is an economy around the stadium, almost a mall. Do these stadiums add to a local economy, or is it the classic billionaire gets taxpayer to pay for it, we all get soaked, and one guy makes out, but these things are a drain on economies? What do you expect from a SoFi stadium or the new Raiders stadium economically in those respective cities?
Well, I think you're right. Typically, it can be a bait and switch in terms of who's going to make the money off of the proposed or forecast economic impact that's coming from those. But when you're talking about the $5 billion or so that Kroenke's put into SoFi Stadium, I think the problems there are far different than other cities where the municipalities have put in a ton of money. And I think your other observation is correct. If you take a look at the Rams, you really can view them as the anchor tenant in a mall, and the Chargers to a lesser extent as a secondary tenant there. But it's all the other music that's coming in. It's going to be clearly the Olympics and World Cup events and college football playoffs and so much more that's going to be coming in there. And so for this first year, when they really want to raise the curtain, well, do the fans want to go? And when you ask yourself about the fans, it's not just the face painters that are the Rams fans with the watermelons on their heads, but it's corporate America who has spent tens of millions of dollars on suites, are hoping to entertain there. What are their budgets looking like right now?
Interesting.
And so you need this great first year. So I think that might be compromised. They got great leadership over there, frankly, and I think they'll figure much of this out. But from a fan standpoint, Colin, I think the other thing that pops up is I'm wondering, and that's all it is, wondering, fans of the L.A. Rams see Gurley move on. Are they wondering to themselves, gee, I wonder if the Rams are going to retrench some of their spending because they don't know what's going to be happening down the road?
Yeah, I do think SoFi Stadium, if you got to go big, because the city, Los Angeles, is so entertainment-driven, I think it'll be a spectacular home for world-class events. I think Jerry Jones did it right. We've seen boxing matches there. When I was a kid growing up in Seattle, you did everything at the Kingdome. High school football, boat shows, concerts. And I think this SoFi Stadium in L.A. will be a spectacular home for that. I want to dip, if we could, David Carter joining us, into sports gambling. And I'm not saying it's your field of expertise, but I did think it's fascinating that Penn Gaming went and bought a big chunk of Barstool. And sports gaming is being kind of delivered state by state. And it's rolling pretty quickly now because some of these municipalities can make money on it. It's tax revenue. What is the end game to you, David? When you look in Europe, you can bet games inside stadiums. Will this be like every business that's developed in America? Very few get rich off it. If I said to you 10 years from now, sports gambling in America, David Carter, where are we at?
It'll be massive. and it will not come without its hiccups. There will still be some advocacy groups out there that are crying about the social ills of it all, and others that are saying it's, as you're suggesting, kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. Who will make the money off of it? The big money? Probably the software companies that are ensuring the legitimacy of it, as well as the leagues. And at some point, you'll see that trickle back down to the players in a very meaningful way. So I think one of the reasons why you're seeing team owners and prospective team owners so bullish on franchise ownership is they see two things going on. They see the growth of the global markets for sport, and they see the ability to unlock tremendous revenue from gambling.
Yeah, you know, this is really a good point, David. I was reading a story about 6 months ago, and it was some article on Global Wealth, and multiple owners were saying, listen, here's what we know. Liverpool will have a wildly popular soccer team in 100 years from now. We don't know if IBM or Google exists in 100 years. Sports has become perhaps the safest in a world of chaos, David. They were making the argument that sports is the one constant in each culture, regardless of its Iraq or Indiana. It doesn't matter. And I think, to your point, gambling is just seen as an additional revenue stream on top of the sports equity revenue stream. I think gambling is just like another layer of income for billionaires who own teams.
Well, that there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, the sports industry at large is going to be siphoning more time and money away from other activities, and it will be funneled via its fans and its gamblers to the teams, whether that's at venue, where they're going to have at some point robust gambling operations, or online from home or wherever else. But again, I think you've got to get back to thinking about there's really two different fan bases. There's that everyday fan base that's going to be very interested in it, the evolution of sport, but so too is going to be corporate America as they wonder, hey, is there an advertising opportunity for us here? Is there a sponsorship opportunity? They're going to take the temperature of society, and then once they get the green light on that, I think you'll see corporate money also supporting and coming in behind some of that fan money.
David, thank you so much for joining us here on a Saturday morning. Good to you and all your family, and it's been a very uncommon February and March, but we appreciate you stopping by.
My pleasure. Have a great weekend.
Want to thank everybody for joining us on a Saturday morning podcast, which we do pretty regularly. Our schedule in the last month has been, we're going to keep trying to find great guests, regardless of where we do the show. I've got a home set up. If I am told by the state of California I cannot leave my house, I've got that set up ready to go. All this past week, I did the shows in Sherman Oaks in a radio studio. Going forward, I hope I can return to FS1 soon. This is a lot of this depends on not just corporate decisions by our governors and our, you know, people that run our cities. So there's a lot of information out there. I advocate strongly listening to doctors and medical professionals to get your information. Go to the CDC website, John Hopkins website. Take a deep breath, everybody. Pharmacies, banks, you know, grocery stores, restaurants, they're open. The supply chain works. I do believe there is better news ahead, and I don't think it's that far off. I said when this started, I thought it would be a spring and summer story. I did not think it was a 2 and 3 week story. I said this is just the beginning. I had access to some smart people in corporate America at the top, and you know, listened a lot and asked a lot of questions. So take a deep breath. Spend a lot of time with your family. Try to get out and do some walks and exercise. But thanks so much for joining us and David Carter this morning. And we will hear you and talk to you on Monday.